Good morning, everybody. My name is Rolf Sommer. I'm from ICADA, which is the International Center for Agricultural Research in the Dry Areas. I'm going to talk about a study that we have done just recently assessing the impact of climate change on wheat productivity and looking into options to alleviate climate change impact. Before I present some more of the technical details, I would like to reiterate what are we looking at when we talk about the potential biophysical impact of climate change on crop growth, not only in the Mediterranean environment. And usually we consider three components, as the previous speaker already has detailed to some extent. We look at the increase in temperature, which may lead to warmer winters and early spring. This is important for winter crops and may lead to better early crop growth, less damaged by frost. Then we have hotter late springs and hotter summers. That may probably lead to crop heat stress and lower grain production. Then higher temperatures also cause a shorter cropping cycle, which also has the potential to lower biomass production and yields. The second part is the change in water availability. Most likely, when we look at the global climate change projections for the future, it is most likely that there will be less rainfall and more weather extremes. That means we may face water stress, resulting again in poor growth and yield. Then the last one is the increase in CO2, and this is the well-known carbon fertilization effect, also leading to a moderate increase in crop growth, as far as scientists agree on that issue.
So there's a potential increase and a potential decrease, and which overpower the other.
Yeah. Then, of course, we have the interactions of 1, 2, and 3. The study took place at headquarters of ICADA. ICADA is located in Syria, and for those of you who are not very familiar with the area, here's a map. Syria is in the center and bordered by Turkey in the north, Iraq, Jordan in the south, and then Israel and Lebanon towards the west. ICADA headquarters is located 30 kilometers south of the city of Aleppo. We have a semi-arid continental Mediterranean type of climate. That means winter rainfall. The average annual precipitation is around 334 millimeters. The average annual temperature is about close to 18 degrees Celsius. The soils at ICADA headquarters and also representative for the areas are either classified as inceptisols or vertisols. They are largely high in clay, 60 to 70%, high in pH, and have a low soil organic matter in the topsoil, which is about 1.2% only. Looking at the cropping system in northern Syria, this is mostly rain-fed. Cropping of wheat, barley, chickpea, lentil, and some other legume crops during the winter and spring rainy season. And then if farmers have access to water, they may go towards supplemental irrigation of the winter crops and fully irrigated second cropping in summer. The summer crops are usually cotton, maize, sorghum, alfalfa, sugar beet, or potato.
What is the source of the water? Is it
It's
Euphrates water, or is it groundwater?
Both, but in the region where the ICADA headquarters is located, it's exclusively groundwater, which brings about some other problems of fast declining groundwater tables. I apologize, the picture is not very clear. I wish this projector would have some more colors, but what I wanted to show here is the visibility of the green area. This is the Google Earth image taken in summer 2004, in September, if I'm not mistaken. And it doesn't come out very clearly, but the ICADA research station is in the middle and is surrounded by quite a few fields that are green and are irrigated in summer. Sorry that you cannot see that. This is a graph of the annual rainfall, the monthly rainfall over the years, starting, please take note, it's starting in September here just to illustrate the winter rainfall. We have the peak rainfall in December to February. What I also wanted to show you here is the minimum and maximum temperatures in April. Mid to late April, or mid-April is when wheat, winter wheat usually flowers, and we have maximum temperatures about 25, not more than 30 usually, and minimum temperatures around 10 degrees. The lower graph is the annual rainfall from 52 till 2010. I wanted to show this just to illustrate that so far we do not see an influence of climate change on rainfall. It's pretty much a straight line. Even though the last 7 years now had rainfall below average.
Too early to tell.
Too early, yeah. The workflow of the study, in the centerpiece of my study is the crop modeling of wheat under climate change conditions using the CropSyst model. Therefore, I had the ICADA Research Station historic daily time step weather data covering the period 1980 to 2010. These data I used to for the LARS weather generator software. This is a stochastic weather generator software which is done by Dr. Semenov at Rothamsted, UK. And I used this software to generate daily time set synthetic weather data sets for a climate change future. This I fed back into the ClimGen weather generator. This is the weather generator from Claudio Stockel, which comes with CropSyst, only for generating relative humidity and wind speed data. On the other hand, there is the crop model calibration of wheat. In that case, I used the Sham 1 variety, which is a durum wheat variety. And I used a data set of 4 years, 4-factorial trial carried out at ICADA on station from 92 till 96, comprising 12 varieties, 3 planting dates, 4 irrigation levels, and 4 end fertilizer levels. Quickly to illustrate the climate change scenarios generated by the LARS weather generator, I used data from 15 GCM models, and the latest LARS software, it has the GCM projections built into the weather generator. So what you do, you only provide it with your historic data, and then you can ask LARS, please produce daily time step data sets for the climate change future, and it provides you the possibility to do this for 15 GCMs. And I did it for this study for the periods 2011 to 2030, 46, 65, and 2080 to 99. And for, as did my, if did the previous speaker for the IPCC AR4 scenario A1B.
So you're looking 90 years ahead.
Yes.
In the third scenario.
Usually what is done in this weather generator, you get information on the change of relative change of precipitation and absolute change in Tmax, minimum, or average, whatever the GCM provides. LARS also has the possibility to digest relative change in solar radiation and relative change in duration of wet and dry spells, but as far as I'm aware, the GCMs do not provide this information yet. These are the results of the weather generation for climate change projections for Tel Hatya, that's ICADA headquarter. And on the left-hand side, you see the relative change in annual precipitation. On the right-hand side, this is the change in annual average temperature for the 15 GCMs and for the 3 future time slices, near, mid, and late future. I don't want to stress your attendance with the details. Just summarizing across all GCMs, we can see that there's approximately a 23% decrease in annual rainfall projected for the far future. And on the other side, a 3 degree increase of annual temperature.
So it's what the Americans call a double whammy, a rise in temperature and a diminution in rainfall.
Exactly.
So greater water stress.
The CropSyst model, for those who are not familiar with it, it's the CropSyst stands for Cropping System Simulation Model. It's developed by Claudio Stöckl, Roger Nelson, Armin Kemenyam, and some co-workers at Washington State University. It's a multi-year, multi-crop daily time-step simulation model, and it's based on the understanding of plant, soil, weather, and management interactions. I also wanted to show you one thing that we did at ICADA. We asked a software engineer to program a new user interface because we are working with quite a few people who do not who have difficulties working with the English user interface. So we have now a user interface for CropSyst. That's the Arabic one, but we also have one in Russian, Uzbek, and I translated one into German, of course.
And you speak Uzbek and Arabic?
No, we had colleagues translating this. I did the German translating. I tried. I also wanted to quickly highlight how CropSyst handles the CO2 fertilization effect. Basically, this happens in two places. First of all, there's an increase of the radiation use efficiency by a so-called growth ratio factor. And the same factor also impacts on canopy conductance and water use efficiency. The details are listed in this table below, and we can come back to it later on if you are interested. In this study, I assumed a 25% increase for doubling in CO2 concentration. So we went from 350 to 700, and the G ratio would go from 1 to 125. For the historic period, 1980 to 2010, the average CO2 concentration would be 357 ppm. So very much close to the 350 where the G ratio would be 1.
So you assume that the ratio is linear with the increasing concentration.
What were the CropSyst model settings for the rain-fed conditions at Tel Hatyor? I used the cascade hourly model and the SCS curve number approach for soil water infiltration. The nitrogen and the soil freezing submodel and the frost damage submodel was enabled. Evapotranspiration was simulated with the Penman-Montes equation. That's why I needed relative humidity and wind speed. Planting date was the 15th of November throughout. And then there was 60 kilograms in total of N fertilizer applied in two doses. And we simulated 3 tillage passes, a moldboard, disc, and chisel plow. Crop physiological and crop phenological parameters were calibrated using the data set that I mentioned earlier. And this is the list of all the parameters. Again, I would say we can look at this later on if there's an interest, because it's quite a long list with a few parameters that are to be calibrated.
Do you mind if I ask, the water application is based on precipitation plus supplementary irrigation?
Yeah, that's what I'm going to talk about now. Of course, under rain-fed conditions, we simply rely on rainfall, whereas under supplemental irrigation conditions, first of all, as we expect a higher biomass and yield, we increase the end fertilizer application by 50 kilograms to a total of 110 kilograms.
And you have a center pivot system here. Is that right? Or linear
one? No, we have a linear one, but this is a modeling study. The model doesn't consider the way water enters or reaches the soil. The model doesn't bother. And for in the model settings, I relied on the automatic irrigation mode, which we started from emergence until 20 days after flowering, which means this is close to maturity. The rule was to replenish soil moisture up to field capacity whenever plant available soil water would drop below 85%. And then the second rule would be not to apply less than 15 millimeters and more than 60 millimeters. This is reflecting what farmers and what we also do on station. The rest of the settings were as under rainfed. Showing you now the results. First of all, these are all the yield simulations for all the 15 GCMs and the three futures separate. The one little bar, this is the historic, Telhatia historic, against which I'm now comparing all the changes. So this is this black line here. And then here are the three futures and the 15 GCMs.
By historic, you mean long-term mean.
This is the 1980-2010 long-term average, yes. First, what we can see for the near future, we have about 67% of the simulations, of the GCM simulations, would result in an increase in yield. This increase now over the time slices decreases to 30% in the late future. That means 4 out of 13 simulation results resulted in higher than historic yields. However, that's funny. It's not supposed to be this wave type of it. I think it's this. There should be a straight line, but anyway. This is now running some statistics in ANOVA and using the least significant difference, which is 0.46, just to highlight that there indeed are only a few of the simulations result would be significantly statistically significant as compared to historic. Summarizing across all GCMs, this is a box whisker plot, the historic one first and then the three futures again. You can see that the near future there would be a slight increase in yield, but in the far future we have a drop in yield of about 23% or equal to 0.44 tons per hectare. And this is significant comparing it against this LSD of 0.37.
To what do you attribute this long-term eventual decrease in potential yield?
The decrease, that's a result of the lower rainfall. And I have summarized these two figures here once again in a table, and you can see as a very, very rough rule of thumb, you can say with each percent drop in annual rainfall, we have 1% drop in yield. But we can also see what is probably even more important is this, the increase in extreme events. So historically, we had every 10 years very low yields, below 0.78, whereas in the far future, every third year, would under rain-fed conditions, would result in very, very low yields.
Well, what extreme events do you refer to?
That means simply the low rainfall events.
Low rainfall.
Yeah. Another interesting aspect which I wanted to show you is when you plot the grain yields against the annual precipitation, and I've distinguished here the three futures. This is the near future, mid, and late future. And I also highlighted here that these are the results of these 15 GCM projections. The lowest would be here this Hadley model, and the highest is this model here. But what you can see, first of all, of course, that means annual precipitation is the major driver of yields, which is not surprising for rain-fed conditions of Syria. But we have also here a shift towards lower rainfall. That means we have, with increasing temperatures and CO2, we have an improvement in water use efficiency. Okay, now talking about how can you alleviate these negative effects of climate change. And ICADA is very much engaged in supplemental irrigation. And this is now, again, the results of the rain-fed conditions, first of all. And this is now only for the one model, which is this IPCL CM4, which is the French GCM model, which turned out to be very much close to the average of all 15. That's why I use this one. And if we engage in supplemental irrigation using the rules that I have explained earlier, this is the result. First of all, we see a sharp increase, of course, in yield, which is expected when you start irrigating. But so these are, this is the annual precipitation, the average for each of these futures. And then this is the supplemental irrigation, which on average was applied. So we can see here that on one hand we have an increase in irrigation water demand from 134 to 181 on average. But again, we also have this quite significant increase in yields, which means that's the attributed to the increase in water use efficiency. Summarizing, there is a significant impact of climate change if we average across all GCM projections in the far future. We are talking about roughly a 23% drop in average grain yields. Supplemental irrigation, not surprisingly, can alleviate the negative impacts of climate change. However, in the majority of years now, in the future, supplemental irrigation may become a necessity to salvage reasonable crop yields. That means there is a higher demand, there will be a higher demand for irrigation water, and the simple question is, where should this come from? CO2 fertilization partly mitigates the negative impact of climate change and improves water use efficiency. I didn't show the figures, but we can show that if we do the same like the previous speaker has done, if we disentangle CO2 from temperature and run it alone, we can see that there's between 20 to 30% mitigation potential of the CO2 fertilization effect. And what I also have not shown is the probability of high or extreme temperatures during flowering does not increase, because flowering in the far future occurs some 7 to 14 days earlier, which means we are shifting the flowering time into cooler periods. One more, the outlook is, what we are planning to do is to do more robust climate change projections by either getting engaged in regional climate change models or more sophisticated downscaling methods. And we certainly need better information on the biophysical impact of frost and high temperatures at flowering and during grain filling on crop production and grain yield. Then, of course, what we want to do is moving from the point scale to the regional scale soon. Thank you very much.
Excellent work, and wonder if we might turn the lights on and ask some questions or take issue. Yes. Elias, please.
Rolf, you showed in your simulation a fair high amount of soil evaporation in the ET. Is there any potential to reduce the soil evaporation on those clay soils and increase the amount of water transpiration?
That's a question I have discussed already various times with our agronomist, Colin Piggin, who is an Australian, who asked exactly the same question. And he always shows me this Angus paper where they did this correlation and coming up with a much lower soil evaporation. I'm skeptical. I think I would love to look into the details, but I think you cannot compare actually what you see the rainfall distribution in Australia with what we have in northern Syria. That's I would not see that. Of course, you can work with conservation agriculture, surface residue retention to get the evaporation down. But in the area where we are working, it's a livestock area, and every straw is used for livestock. If you have ever been in the area when the herders move across a stubble field, afterwards it looks like vacuum cleaned. You cannot even tell what has been grown there. So I don't see much hope for leaving lots of residues, because the value of the residues is so high.
But it would be interesting to try it as an experiment, to leave the residue and the straw mulch on the surface and see what the effect is on direct evaporation component. Tell me, the trampling by livestock, how does that affect the surface structure of the soil? Does that fill in the cracks or turn the soil, make it more apt to crust?
Yeah, that's a tough question, and I'm my position at ICARA is also I'm the soil scientist at ICARA. I should have an answer for you, but I don't have. We did not look into that.
In future years.
But I mentioned in the beginning we have the soils we have this vertic self-mulching characteristics.
So it's a vertice soil.
Yeah. So you may have these compaction effects, but they may be limited. And as the soil is self-mulching, after a few years, it becomes fluffy again.
Yes, right here. Go ahead.
Yes, you mentioned your conclusion about native regions, how to get the water for sedimentary irrigation. This is a major issue. And let me add also the cost of adding this water. You know, you have to add it within an irrigation system. And usually you plant trees and in such a country which I am from, Jordan, the output of these crops are very low. So if you haven't enough water for sedimentary irrigation, and you need to use an irrigation system. So in the end, your results, how applicable would you?
Yeah, my first answer would be, sorry that the image is so unclear, but the summer cropping, fully irrigated summer cropping, Syria producing sugar beets, I think that must stop. That's the first thing. If I was the government, that's the first thing I would stop. Go for supplemental irrigation for the winter crops because the return for each drop of water is much higher.
Yes, please.
I'm lucky to have Claudia Stockley. No, but the frost is quite straightforward. The model considers a certain threshold value where the frost damage starts. Let's say in our case it was -5°C. That's according to the breeders. That's when we experience some damage of the canopy. And then you have a lethal temperature. In my case it was -11. That's when all the crop would be killed, and it's simply linear. I guess it's a linear response with negative temperatures.
I was thinking more about frost at flowering, which I think is an issue there.
Oh no, we don't have frost at flowering. That's in April. There are no frost. I mean, that would be very, very unlikely.
Yeah. I understand that Dr. Stockley is here.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, he explained well.
Would you like to comment?
Did you mention heat stress?
I also heat stress. I want to teach stress.
Yeah. The heat stress.
We do have. Based on, I can't remember the author, a couple of papers where they had studied grain number versus temperature, and they calculated the thing at the level of degree hours, actually. It's a very detailed that allow you then to determine a decrease in the potential harvest index. And that's, and certainly it depends on you calculating the window, estimating the window for flowering in a proper way, which I always not sure with these phenomenal models, and you need to hit within 7 days, how good you're doing, right? That's what we do.
These are periods of water stress, or?
No, we're talking heat stress.
Heat stress. Thank you. Yes, please.
Maybe a little off topic, but did you try to close the energy balance with the present methods you are using for the research?
Which method?
To close the energy balance, did you try to see how well your methods are closing? Do you consider maybe employing some direct measurements, like
ethical
variance there?
Yeah, if you know somebody who would fund this, we are desperately wanting to get involved into ethical variance studies. And, but we are more, we want to have these studies because of the CO2 rather than water and energy. Because we are interested, ICARA is doing a lot on conservation agriculture, as we mentioned, residue retention, zero tillage, and we would like to know what are the carbon budget, and therefore we thought we should have an eddy tower. But so far we did not get the funds yet, but we are looking into that.
What's the size of your field?
At headquarters, ICARA headquarters, they are quite huge. Here maybe you get an impression of the size of the fields, but they are maybe, what you can see down there is maybe 100, 150 meter longs, but small strips as you can see. So 150, 200 meter longs and maybe 50 meter wide.
So you can do this calculation without worrying about the fetch.
Yeah, at headquarters we have much larger fields. We have 2, 3, 4 hectare fields easily.